Welcome to Fantasy, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am the product of two adults who didn't see any of this bullshit coming. Jared Hill.
Wow, not to just comment out the gate for your parents' forethought or lack thereof. Listen,
honey, but you didn't tell me I was wrong.
I am the product of at least one person who knew she was going to have a bad bitch as a child, okay?
Wow.
I'm Travelle Anderson. Coming up on the show today, we're going to complain a little bit, right, about being Black, queer, and visible with a very special guest. But first, we've got a new segment here on Fanti.
I'm so excited!
You've asked, well, actually, we asked, and y'all answered with your question. So we're starting our new segment, Ask Fanti, okay, to be able to answer any advice questions you all might have. If you're listening out there, it is something that we're going to be doing. It'll be a rotating segment. Hit us up at fanti@maximumfun.org with your question. And the first inaugural Ask Fanti, it goes to someone by the name of Gray. And Gray says, "Hi, Fanti. How does one deal with feelings of not being queer enough? I'm a cis man and have recently realized that I might be asexual, yet I worry that I'm not ace enough. I am very straight presenting and have only started exploring my sexuality in the sensory deprivation tank that is the pandemic, and it all still feels very up in the air. I wonder that if I tell another queer person that I'm ace, they will give me a look filled with condescension and skepticism. I know that this is unlikely to happen and that this fear is likely an expression of my own doubt. However, it still haunts me. I've started identifying myself as gray sexual around my friends to suggest the internal debate I'm having, but it feels awkward and performative to be named gray and be a gray sexual. Have you experienced queer imposter syndrome, and how have you handled it? Thank you for reading this email. Huge fan of the show and proud member of the Fanti fam. Look forward to your advice episode. Well, we're doing it as a segment, not an episode. Hope to hear more voices from the ace spectrum. I'll get you on that, Gray. Jared, queer imposter syndrome. How does one deal with feelings of not being queer enough?
So I'm intrigued with all things to do with the imposter syndrome as a person who's dealt with it for a long time. I've not felt it about queerness before, but the first thing that I immediately think is I remember talking with someone about some of my own imposter syndrome stuff, and they said to me, "Who told you that, and why do you believe them?" When I was telling them about, well, I don't feel like I'm this enough, or I'm not that enough, or I didn't go there, and I didn't do this, or I didn't, you know, whatever. And so I would ask you, Gray, like, who told you you weren't queer enough, and why do you believe them, right? I one of those people who likes to try to eliminate the word should from as many situations as I can, because should always comes along with some outside perspective on what something is supposed to be. And I think you are supposed to be whoever you want to be, right? You can be as ace or not as you want to be. You can be as queer or not as you want to be. And even that, like, how are you defining queer, right? What are the definitions of these things, and why are you so committed to them in that way? I mean, it makes me think about the ways that we talked about gender and all of those other things. Like, we're really committed to these constructs that are not real.
Well, but they are real insofar as the ways that people make us feel, right? The way that media makes us feel, the way that, you know, literally every single thing that we absorb makes us feel. And it is a very real, right, experience to move through spaces, any sort of space, and not feel like you are, you know, whether it's queer enough or Black enough or, you know, enough of a journalist, you know, whatever the case may be. I think what you mentioned in terms of just like questioning, you know, the foundation of those beliefs is super spot on. I think for me, it's about realizing that, you know, I can define these terms for myself. And you don't just have to accept the definitions that have been, you know, given to you. I'm reminded of the episode with Deshaun, whose book is officially out today as we're recording it, so you all need to go check it out, Belly of the Beast, The Politics of Anti-Fatness as Anti-Blackness, or Anti-Blackness as Anti-Fatness.
Anti-Blackness as Anti-Fatness.
That episode, the No Sissies Allowed episode, we talked about particularly being in trans community, right, as non-binary folks, and being made to feel like we aren't trans enough. And so I would say, similar to that episode, you know, what Deshaun mentions in that episode, we have to realize that all of these conceptions about whether or not we are anything enough are manifestations of systems of oppression, of white supremacy, of patriarchy, of cis sexism, of cis heteropatriarchy. Y'all know all of the words, okay? Call up Audre Lorde and bell hooks, all of them words. Y'all know who I'm talking about. And I think once we recognize that, it's a lot easier to divorce ourselves from those expectations when we realize that those expectations never had us in mind anyway from the beginning. And that has been something that's been deeply liberating for me in my journey with queerness and transness and being non-binary. And I hope for you, Gray, that it can be of use for you as well. Also, I love you saying that you are gray sexual. Why? That doesn't have to be a bad thing. I don't feel like it's awkward or performative. That I think it goes to show that you're doing your own thing. You're working it out and figuring it out. And, you know, the beauty of what queer spaces are supposed to be is they're supposed to be spaces where you can do that, where you can play with the language, right, that holds and doesn't hold us. I mean, you can create something completely new that specifically does what you need it to do. So I would encourage you to lean into that and to, you know, make it do what it do, honey.
I would also offer, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately with my own personal development is, like, I don't want to wait until I'm 60 to feel okay with myself doing X or being X or feeling X or whatever. Like, I feel like we see so many, like, folks that reach certain ages and they're like, oh, now I feel so much more comfortable to say this or to do this or whatever. Mm. And, like, I don't want to have to wait forever to feel comfortable in my own skin. And so, Gray, I would offer to you as well, like, ask yourself these questions, have these conversations with yourself, and think about how you're internalizing all of these things, and, like, do that work so that you can be on the other side of it.
I would just like to affirm you, Jared, before we go, you do not have to wait until you turn 43 to drop down and get your eagle on. You can do it right now at 42.
Well, listen, these knees still work, so...
I love that you focused on the knees and not the age, but that's all right. Well, that's all right.
No, because, you know, I have really done my work around your ageism and your disrespect. So we're going to take a quick break. Before we go, though, we want to remind you, if you have anything that you want our advice on for Ask Fanti, make sure to put advice in the subject line. Shoot us an email to fanti@maximumfun.org, and we might use your advice on an upcoming episode. When we come back, very excited to have a guest joining us to talk about being Black, queer, and visible. His name is Ryan Mitchell, and you're not going to want to miss it. No matter how you're feeling about getting back out there, there's no denying it's an adjustment. When the world gets too loud, create your own soundtrack with Raycon wireless earbuds. Sometimes you need upbeat music to pump you up before you go see people or to stay calm with some guided meditation. I know for myself, I am always listening to a podcast, to music, to a TV show, to something. And it's always great to be able to get wireless earbuds to be able to move freely around the house. If I want to go outside and take a walk, it's always a lot more convenient. There's nothing that used to frustrate me quite like hitting the cord on my headphones and knocking them out of my ears, especially while on the phone or something like that. It's incredibly, incredibly annoying. But Raycons come with a bunch of gel tips for your comfort, and they don't stick out of your ears. Raycons have a 32-hour battery life, and they start at half the price of other premium audio brands, but they sound just as good. And Raycons come with a 45-day happiness guarantee. Create your own soundtrack with Raycon right now. Fanti listeners are getting 15% off their Raycon order by raycon.com/fanti. That's buyraycon.com/fanti to save 15% on your Raycons. That's buyraycon.com/fanti.
This podcast is also sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. All right. It doesn't matter who you are or what you have. Life can be stressful. Okay. You got that man in your life who is just making you want to pull out all your hair. Okay. Yeah, and I say men, I was going to list all the other genders too, but we know it's always the men. Okay. Wait, particularly if they are cis. Okay. See, he interrupting the ad read right now. Oh, no. Just always mess it up. Okay. Sometimes you just need to decompress. Okay. You don't even feel down and out. You don't feel depressed. You just need to unload and talk to somebody who ain't gonna judge you, all right? You can do that through BetterHelp. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, and it can be more affordable than in-person therapy. We want you to see if it's for you, okay? This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Fanti listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Fanti, all right? Have your first session in under 48 hours at BetterHelp.com/Fanti.
Welcome back to Fanti. So one of the shows we've had on our docket for a long time has been this week's conversation on being Black, queer, and visible. It's something we've talked about amongst ourselves for a long time, but this weekend we began having a conversation, Travell and I, about it while at drinks with our guest this week. Ryan Mitchell is joining us. Ryan is a radio personality over at My Old Job. If any of you know, we'd be from Channel Q. Ryan is one of the hosts there hosting Let's Go There with Ryan and Shira. You'll also see Ryan in some pretty cool things coming up very soon, but non-disclosure agreements abound. We started talking this weekend about the ways that our lives seem to be uniquely similar to each other's, but also uniquely different than many folks we work with or are in some form of community with. As people who are Black, queer, and also have some level of visibility, there are some things about this time that are really cool and really fun, but also scary or weird or frustrating. It felt like a conversation that we never really get to have on the air otherwise, except this is, you know, our show and we actually can talk about it on the air. So we are going to kind of take this in a point by point structure. We want to welcome Ryan Mitchell to Fanti. Welcome.
What's up? Oh my God, I feel like I'm dreaming. Like, this is a moment.
You are so much.
It has finally happened. The light is behind you.
I've only had to beg 74 times.
Well, wow. I mean, we've only had 70 episodes, so chill.
Okay. Exactly. Every episode, I'm begging to come on.
Okay, so let's just dive into it and talk about some of the different things. Travell and I were talking about the different areas where this shows up for us. And Travell, I'll let you start. Let's talk about dating and like love.
Oh, wow. We're jumping right in there. Okay.
Well, I mean, you know.
All right. Okay, fine. Let's do it. Okay, so dating as a Black, queer, visible person. You know, here's the thing. Okay. I don't know if you all feel this experience, but I just feel like when I was dating, I always had to be concerned.
Oh, are we using past tense verbs?
Oh.
Wait, I just want to be clear. Go ahead.
I'm going to mind my business.
Listen, I don't get in white people business, so I'm over here. I'm eating a pretzel.
This is beautiful.
Well, I am not currently dating.
Oh.
So when I was dating, okay. I, you know.
Go ahead on, sis. I'm
you
sorry.
Know, I'm just watching them, like, just say it. You know, I'm, like, following you, babe. I'm following you.
Listen, I'm not hate offering y'all so anything much. That you're not. Get your life.
I hate y'all so much right now. I hate y'all so much. Anyway, okay, when I was dating a number of years ago, this is when I was working at the LA Times. That's how I got my, you know, my beginning stages of sort of visibility or whatever. I feel like I always had to, you know, go into the dating landscape a little skeptical. Because I had a lot of people who, to be quite frank, just wanted to get close to me because they thought I could do something for them. They thought I could, you know, put them on, take them to some sort of event, you know, cover whatever, you know, poorly produced track that they've got going on or something like that.
The disrespect of the independent artist.
Oh, shade.
Well, no, it's no shade toward the independent, but, you know, you got to have that production quality where it needs to be, honey,
Amen.
All right?
Amen. It's very
but
true.
But I feel like that experience and, you know, doing my dating thing, particularly at that time, and even now, you know, it's you can't just go into a date and like, or a relation, I won't say relationship, but a relation, for me at least, without having that kind of in the back of your mind of just like a potential. And so I feel like it just augments what dating looks like for us as Black queer mm-hmm. folks. Even as we already have, you know, the general shit that everybody has to deal with in terms of, like, the dating scene being trash. But that's the most immediate thing that comes to mind when I think about, like, dating within the context of being, you know, a semi-visible person. Not to mention the non-binary of it all. You know, the girls don't. Ooh, my God. It's so...
Ryan, before Travelle goes too far off the deep end here and says something they don't want to, Ryan, what's the dating scene like for you as a Black queer visible person?
Wow, how much time do we actually have? Because
about 22 minutes. So.
Because for me, being Black, queer, invisible, and then adding the layer of me being fat, because I'm not afraid of that word. That's what I am. That's who I am. It is very difficult because at the end of the day, it's like I will meet people who... especially us living in Los Angeles, it's a very superficial town. If you do not have the body, if you are not fit in the perspective, or if you're not conventionally attractive that fits all these molds, then guess what? You're really not getting any play. And then the play that you are getting, low-key, is like nothing but like the weirdos who want to see me eat, like, I don't know, Swiss cake rolls every 5 seconds.
I can't. So
it's one of those things where I navigate...
Can I pause you there? not for the jokes, because like that is crazy, but like I think people will hear that and think that you're joking, but that is like a real thing.
Oh my God, no, it's actually a real thing where people fetishize fat folks in ways that only it's either sexualizing them or wanting them to eat more. And they you know, there's some profiles online that say I only want 200 plus folks and you got to have a big belly. And it's just like all of that makes me so uncomfortable because at the end of the day, I'm still just a human. And so the fact that I can't even navigate these spaces where I'm looking for just a simple date without feeling like, oh my God, are they going to be like overly obsessive over my stomach or my thighs or all of these things? It makes me feel uncomfortable. And it's just like, how am I supposed to navigate these spaces or not internalize my own worth when I am getting play and not internalize this idea of like, you know, oh my God, someone normal, quote unquote normal, is like hitting me up and they got their stuff together. But then don't add the layer of them finding out that I work in on camera or behind a mic and they get intimidated by the levels of visibility that brings with that. And so it's really difficult in this multi-layered moment in time in my life personally, because relationships for me have been very interesting. I feel like I can only count on one hand how many relationships I've been in that I would count as real relationships. But dating is intense, especially as a fat Black queer person in Los Angeles and across the world, to be honest, because fatness is still not looked at something as like we want to call you attractive. People still call you out and say you need to lose weight or say you're fat, you're too big and all these things. Like it's still exists. The fat phobia is real.
I want to touch on something that you all were talking about initially, and it's like the people having perception of who you are or like about what you do or something like that. That's been interesting to me because I've always felt weird about people knowing me from my work and, oh, I listen to your show, or, oh, I watch your this, or, oh, I, you know, whatever, or, oh, I read... and it's not a bad thing so much as it is it's a thing that always makes me think like, so what have you already crafted in your mind about who I am, what I do, what I have, and all that? Like, and that is the thing that happens. Like literally this morning, I'm on a dating app and someone said to me, oh, I couldn't help but like to do some light research on you. And I was like,
Light research.
Right. And I was like, okay. No. And I mean, but like part of that is modern dating, right? In 2021, where everyone is on social media and that kind of thing. But the other part of it is being a visible person. Travelle, what is it? What were we going to say?
No, I was just going to ask about like, do you have your social profiles linked to your dating profile?
No, I don't. I never link them, but I also have like, a very distinctly spelled name. And so like, I used to not put my name. I would just put like J or something like that, which I think I'm going to go back to, because if you type in Jarrett and you're on social media and you're a Black queer person, it's not going to be very hard to find me. I might not be the first result, but like, you're going to find me eventually. And so that's challenging, which kind of loops to the other issue. Go ahead, Ryan.
No, well, I was thinking about this as well, because last year during the quarantine, I did go on kind of like a quarantine date at the beach with a guy that I met on a dating app, right? And I thought, yeah, oh my God, this is great. This is like really interesting. The date was really interesting, but we ended up talking about like first impressions and like what he thought. And he automatically, which I've been told this before, the persona that they see online, they it's like they try to balance it, being like, I wonder if he's actually that person or if it's kind of a heightened version, which I think depending on where you see me or where what I'm doing, if I'm on MTV, I'm giving more of a heightened version of myself for entertainment value and purposes. But like, I think it was really shocking for him to realize like, oh, you're actually a lot more chiller and a little bit more quiet. And you're not as like, he kind of insinuated that I'm not as like them in a way, which kind of was problematic and one of the reasons why we're not really we're not really like talking as much as long as everything else.
You're saying that he thought you weren't femme enough?
No, he thought I wasn't that as femme
as he expected.
Gotcha. Yes. Right? Because, you know, if you see me online, you see in this big personality and everything that is, which is me. That is who I am. But I'm also in person, I'm a little bit more chiller. I'm a little bit more relaxed. And it's really interesting how people, if they do find you on social and you meet them in person, how they already have these kind of prejudged, like, oh, this is who this person is based just off online strictly, which kind of sucks because it's like, online, I'm not even giving you a half of who I am, right? I'm only, it's kind of there for work purposes at this point. It's not me.
Yeah, it's funny because that's kind of that idea of like people coming in with an idea of who you are based on what they've seen and like not giving you like the opportunity to be yourself. I remember dating someone and them saying to me like, oh, you're a lot like softer and kinder and gentler than I expected you to be. And I was like, oh, because you always see me on Instagram yelling about whiteness and telling white people that they're on some bullshit and Donald Trump is the end of the world. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that you would have that perspective.
I was just thinking about how people doing their Googles or people doing their research, connecting to our social profiles actually could potentially be like a weeding out of people. Because like you just mentioned, Ryan, if somebody is looking at my social media and they see this, you know, high femme presentation and then we meet in person and they say that I'm cooler or more mask or whatever than they expected, and then that is something that is attractive to them, then that's a red flag, okay? You don't need to be coming up in these streets in the first place, honey, over here, okay?
Yes,
so
yes.
I do see a positive also from being somewhat visible, right? Because theoretically, it lets potential suitors know from the jump that, you know, Black trans lives matter in this household, Black lives matter in this household, and we can go down the list because you have been able to absorb whatever that visibility affords me. You know my politics, you know where I stand, and if you're not into it, go on down the street somewhere.
One of the other things that's interesting to me is that the Black queer circle is just too small. We're all separated by about 0.75 doses of PrEP.
Yikes.
Wait.
Am I wrong?
You can't just say that and just move on.
Am I wrong? It's frustrating because, like, for instance, I have an ex who, their ex was literally another light-skinned Black man named Jared. And the previous person that they had gone on a date with was the same person that I had previously gone on a date with.
That doesn't bother me because we're all adults and we're dating. Like, that's just what it is. Especially out here, there's not that many of us.
Well, that's my point, though. The circle is so small. It didn't bother me. I wasn't upset or didn't, like, make him less of an option or someone I was canceling off. But it was just also one of those moments where it was like, Jesus Christ, all of us know each other, are so connected to one another. I was on a call with that same ex and they were talking about a party that they had and someone brought someone to the party. I'm like, oh, I've been on dates with him, or, oh, I fucked him. You know what I mean? Like different things like that. It's all, the circle is so small.
Either I don't have friends, which could be the answer. I want to acknowledge.
Because I was just about to say that too, Travail. I literally was just about to say that.
I've never experienced that. Before the last relationship, I went on a few dates, and only one of those people with black motherfuckers, to be clear, only one of those people was somehow connected. Like, I saw them at a party a few months later. That's not a consistent thing in my experience. So I wonder if this is the black gay, like, to hyper-focus it in more specific to the black gays. Because it's not, that's not necessarily my experience. Yeah. Not yet, at least. We'll see.
And to be honest, it's not my experience really either, because we've had conversations, and we just had this conversation about like how I'm just now kind of forming my social life in ways. And so I can see how that could be something that could pop up as like I'm starting to make more relations and make more connections. Yeah. But for me, at the most part, I feel like everyone that I've either met, even after my relationship that I moved out here with and we ended up parting ways, I met people in social settings. So like at a house party, and like it was like over here in like Silver Lake or Echo Park. And to be honest, there's not a whole bunch of blacks. And if they are, they're kind of like artsy blacks who are like not really into my like other black people. They're into white folks, to be quite honest. Like let's be very honest here. And so for me, it's been really interesting how I've navigated even dating now and seeing like, well, what's this next phase of dating for me specifically as a black queer person in this city? And I'm still trying to figure it out, because sometimes I get exhausted, if I'm being quite honest.
We can figure it out together, honey, okay? Yeah. How you do it.
I feel like there's so much that we could talk about there. Travelle, I know that you were kind of thinking about like whether or not you get a private life, or can you just be a hub?
Well, yeah. You know, when you have a little bit of visibility, there's always a potential for eyeballs on you. Like, okay, so I'm here in Martha's Vineyard right now to moderate something at the African American Film Festival here.
Flex.
And just work, okay?
Which I think is an oxymoron, but go on.
Mind your business. I walked into the lobby of the bed and breakfast that I'm staying at, and there are a number of people there who recognize me, who know my name, who know my work. And so, like, even on the other side of the country, in Martha's Vineyard, right? I mean, it's a film festival, so there's, you know, film people or whatever. But, like, if I wanted to hop on an app or something and have somebody slide through my room or whatever, motherfuckers is looking. Okay. Do I want all my tea out in these streets? I don't think so.
Well, that's how I also feel about sending nudes. To be honest, I don't care.
Period.
Actually, I love my body, honey. If you want to leak it, girl, put it out there, because guess what? It's literally the gold at the end of the rainbow. Period.
Yes.
And so for me, it's like that's just what it is. But it also, I know, especially as I started to like gain a following online, on Instagram specifically, I would have just randoms kind of sliding into my DMs. And oftentimes I wasn't sure if they were into the people I was connected with, or if they wanted to like have like these kind of low-key inappropriate conversations. I'm like, I don't know what screenshots are about to happen, how that can pop up later. You have to really be careful, because at the end of the day, people are waiting to like turn that flip and like be like, I'm calling this person out, or you know. I think that's something you have to be really mindful of, and so for me, I rather just stay very to myself and not really connect in that way online through a DM. It's just not for me, because I just don't know. It's too tricky.
And I was just going to add that visibility, you know, whatever modicum level of visibility that we do have, it does, because it is also connected to our work, right? And our brands and our livelihood, to then be as unfolded as possible in public, or to really be dipping it and doing it in the DMs and in the Grindr messages and stuff like that, you could potentially be endangering future like work opportunities, because people still feel a type of way, right, about sex, and particularly queer sex, right, and all of that. And so it's like, I think it's just so many things that we have to consider that, like, unfortunately other folks, and I should also recognize that, like, you know, we are all speaking from a obviously privileged place, you know, being visible, having platforms, all of that other stuff. So I do want to recognize that for whoever is out there listening, rolling their eyeballs at us. But that doesn't mean we still don't have our particular issues. And I did want to note and bring up, you both talked about like social media and how it's like an extension of the brand and the work. I wanted to know your thoughts on, like, do you ever feel like you're required or expected to have a hot take about the latest black thing or the latest black queer thing. Like, I felt this way over the past few weeks with Dabubu. That's what I call him. Y'all know who I'm talking about. I literally had people DM me asking me for my thoughts, right? People emailing me wanting me to write a particular story because of the visibility. And it's just like, sometimes I don't care.
I think that is such a great point because, I mean, as someone who's kind of in the hosting realm and then also culture commentator realm, where that literally I get called on to tell my opinion, my perspective, POV, mm-hmm. it feels like there is pressure to always kind of have a hot take. But then often I've gotten to the point now where if I feel like I'm not adding any value to the conversation, or if I'm not moving the conversation forward, or if someone said something and I can just hit a retweet, then guess what? I'm not going to add anything, because oftentimes people really, especially if you're black and queer, people really want you to kind of sit in this, like, things that could be traumatic for you, are triggering for you. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't, sometimes I need to take a break. I need to take a breather from the bigger picture of it all and give myself time to even think about it. But, you know, I also, if I have a hot take, I will tweet it. I will say something about it. If you ask me about it, I will, you know, have something to say, because I work in radio. I do it daily. You kind of have to have, you know, these quick soundbite moments that I feel like I've gained as a talent from that job. But I also want to be thoughtful about what I'm talking about, because anytime someone is bringing or asking my opinion, then yeah, it's going to be there forever, regardless of where it's at. You know, there's a responsibility with it.
That was something I felt the most when I was at Channel Q, because our show was 4 hours a day, which means we have 16 segments per show, which means I have to have 16 perspectives, opinions, things to say every day.
Yeah,
right.
Literally.
And
now.
So to have to do that every day and be able to have an opinion about Trump, to have an opinion about DaBaby, to have an opinion about, you know, respect and Jennifer Hudson, and have an opinion about this, and then have interview questions, and then have, like, it's a lot to contribute every single day. And I think that for me with social media, it's been interesting because my social media tends to be very political and very pop cultural. And so, like, people oftentimes want to have a conversation with me about their political opinion, mm-hmm. or they want to have a conversation about politics or about vaccines or about this or that. And, like, sometimes I'm very much so game for it, because, like, it's just a natural part of who I am. And then there are some times where I'm like, I don't want to talk to you about that. Like, I don't know you, or you don't have, like, the range for me to want to have that conversation with you, or I just want to sit here and drink this whatever, or eat whatever. You know what I mean? It's
the range. It's the range for me, because I think for me, I'm never going to engage in a conversation where I feel like I'm talking to a brick wall, or no one's willing to, like, engage in a place where they understand or wanting to see different perspectives. Like, that's just never going to be something I'm going to do. I learned that very early on when I stepped foot into this space, being like, why do I need to convince you to respect someone's humanity or respect someone's time and place in this world? Like, I'm not going to do that. And so for me, if I feel like y'all don't have the range, guess what? I'm moving on and pretending like you kind of just don't exist, if I'm being quite honest.
I feel like always having to have an opinion, always having to have a hot take is something that has been difficult. I will say that I've kind of scaled back my, like, I'm not reporting day to day anymore or on the air every day. And so, like, I've tried to scale back how much I have to contribute. But then I also feel like there's an element of always needing to be aware of what's happening. Something we talked about, I think, in our journalism or freelancing episode, but then people always expecting it of you, and then always having something to say back to you, or wanting to respond to something that they heard you say on a show or on social media. It's a weird thing.
I think it's one of those things for me where it's like, I used to feel like I had to be on social media, like I had to interact with folks. But at this point in my life, this is not even just about career. I'm just like, I'll respond if I want to respond. And it is what it is, right? I think, you know, the preoccupation that folks sometimes have with, like, you know, having claim or laying claim to our ability to respond, or to, you know, they say something because they want to hear our thoughts on stuff. That's great. Love to see it. Keep coming back. But sometimes, like, that's not it's not a requirement for me to always respond and always be part of those conversations. And I think that there is a just like a shift or like a schism between what like audiences' expectations are of visible people, mm-hmm. even semi-visible folks like us, and what our kind of responsibility or desires are. I did want to bring up one thing before we let Brian go. You know, folks often think that with visibility comes security, and that can be security in terms of financial, but in the case of this conversation, I'm talking about security in terms of our personhood. And I found that like greater visibility does not make me more safe as a Black queer non-binary person. It actually brings more attention, unfortunately. And so, you know, not only do I gotta stay strapped, okay, you know, just in case. And by strapped, I mean not a gun, because, you know, but I'm just saying like a little gadget or something, you know, little something
that pop out your keys.
Listen, okay, you just got to be prepared just in case. But what thoughts do you, either of you have, if you want to go first, Ryan, because I know you have to go, about what the safety looks like for you as a visible person?
Well, safety is so interesting because I guess because the numbers and kind of being thrown into some sort of visibility kind of came out of nowhere for me. It was very shocking when I started to get like a large amount of death threats. Like they chilled out, but I've gotten the death threats. I've gotten the people saying they're watching me and in very negative ways. I felt all of those things. And then I've also, from the other extreme, felt where people automatically assume that I'm out here living in wealthy mansions and I got all this money and I'm, you know, all these bills are being paid in ways, not realizing that there's a hustle that comes with the visibility part of it, right? Because just because we're visible doesn't mean people who are behind the scenes or gatekeeping are paying us what we're worth. And so there's a connection there that sometimes is like kind of a disconnect. And I think when people see those blue check marks, they feel like, oh my God, those are the people who are making all this money and they are, you know, doing all these things. And it's just kind of false. It is for some, but for most of us, it is one of those things where we're still hustling. We're still trying to figure it out. And we're still grinding to get to that next step and still, you know, creating boundaries for ourselves where we can give you all as an audience what you want because we appreciate that you are, you know, willing to listen to us and support us in ways, but then also create boundaries for ourselves where we feel like we can create some sort of safety and not feel like you have like, I don't know, like you own us in some sorts, right? I think there's this weird kind of ownership that I think audience feels when they start to support you in ways. And so, yeah, it's been really interesting to navigate those spaces because it can be difficult at times. At this point, I just kind of ignore the negative messages. But when it comes to the financial side of it, where I'm like having like family members or they see me interviewing Demi Lovato and seeing me somewhere, they thinking like, oh my God, I got all the money in the world. And, you know, it's just really interesting to navigate these new levels as you grow and evolve. It's been very telling on like what people perceive as like success.
My granny used to say something, and you can go Jared. She used to say, new levels, new devils. And if you're not at that level, you don't know what type of devil I'm facing. It's okay. True. So don't think it's all rosy over here. Okay.
Honey, new levels, new devils. Don't crow no more.
Amen.
But I, one of the things that's been interesting with me about safety and visibility and security as we're talking about this, and I want to say I've mentioned this on the show before, but I was really reluctant to even talk about it publicly, is like, one, I've had like some weird stalkery stuff happen in my inbox where like I'll get emails from people that are like, oh, can't wait to see you, or I love you so much, or here's my pic, like those kinds of weird things. But then being a person whose name is attached to like stories about Donald Trump, whether it's from Melania or coverage online or stories that I've written or whatever, I always found it strange that people would go through the process of finding my website, figuring out how to contact me, fill out the form to send me an email to then tell me to go kill myself or that I'm, you know, whatever. But then also earlier this year, the insurrection that happened at the Capitol, between the insurrection and the end of the election and all of those things, it was really, really traumatic for me. And I've talked about before, like not being able to watch news for a good amount of time, but like a big part of it for me was not feeling safe, right? And not feeling like if they can bust into the Capitol like that, they can sure as hell get up in my apartment, right? And having like angry white Trump supporter people send me like hateful things. And then I would like wake up in the middle of the night with like the image of like someone breaking into my home in like tactical gear.
That just gave me chills.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And like for a long time, I was really concerned about that. And I'm not as concerned about it now, but like the safety.
That's
because
Jared stays strapped up, y'all.
Well, I want to know how y'all. I really want to know how y'all deal with it because, as I mean, Jared, you were, you know, it was like us. We were the only two Black hosts on Channel Q, and I'm now the only Black host.
Yeah.
And I went through it in ways during last year where we were seeing this racial awakening that was such. I mean, a depressing, a burnout of time of like I was taking on new roles, but then I was also having these, you know, super in-depth conversations about murders of Black lives. And then when you're adding on the Black queer perspective, like there was just so much to that. And like recently, a few months ago, you know, I get calls in the station or I get an article written about me telling me I need to shut my mouth or I can't say the things that I'm saying or calling white people out for their racism and white supremacy is like, you know, they're calling me out specifically and no one else kind of does that, right? No one else has those experiences because I am a Black queer person behind a mic saying the things that I'm saying and rattling, you know, the mindsets of our listeners in ways, right? And it impacts me and I'm trying to navigate those, that moment where I'm like, it comes with the territory. I keep telling myself like, this is what it is. But then also I'm very real. Like it does kind of make me like, well, damn, no one else is getting any of this. Like, is it just going to be me out here kind of like, you know, catching strays every 5 seconds? You know, it's, just, it's intense. It really does feel sometimes intense. And I don't want to be overwhelmed by it. But I'm human at the end of the day. And that last year changed me inside and out in ways that I was not expecting as a person who was a broadcaster and does what we do.
I remember being at Channel Q and we had a listener who was very Republican, but like was listening to Channel Q and would often like chime in on the show, but then also like would DM me on Instagram with like questions or thoughts about what was going on in the world. And then like their last year, I've been gone from Channel Q since the top of 2020, but like last year during all of the things that were happening with COVID and uprisings and all that kind of stuff, their language to me started to get uncomfortable. And I think it was probably last summer when I was like, you know what? I'm not doing this with you. And the Block gang got real strong, right? Like, I will block you. I will not respond. I will leave you on red. Or I'll report you, right? Like, I'm just not playing the games anymore. And I'm just much more aware than I had been in years prior.
Last question. Because we've been, you know, complaining about, you know, the foolishness that we have to deal with as Black queer visible people. I want to ask you both before we get out of here. What do you love about being Black, queer, and visible? Let's start with you, Ryan.
That is such a beautiful question. I feel like I find something new to love about being Black, queer, and visible every single day, especially when I'm adding in my fatness in ways, because it is a part of who I am, right? And I think my hesitance to wanting to even be in this industry or be in front of the camera or behind the mic was because I was not seeing anyone that looked like me at all in any way, any shape or any form, or if there were, they would be made as the joke or they would be made as no one who's going to be able to succeed over a level that, you know, only certain people are giving them. And so for me, I feel like as my time has, as I'm growing in these spaces, it just is so wild that I get to say what I want, I get to be who I want, and I get to honestly do what I want in all ways and take up the space where it's just like, I don't think I could see myself doing anything else. Like, that's beautiful, right? That's liberating. That feels, that feels like world changing. And so for me, like I'm coming to grasp more and more and quieting that imposter syndrome that I felt like I was dealing with for such a long time, where it's like, no, you're here for a reason. Like whatever you believe in, I'm here and I'm doing it. And guess what? Ain't nobody gonna take me out of it unless I wanna go. And so for me, like I'm just obsessed with this idea of it's our time. It's been our time. We deserve this time. And it's beautiful to see the community that we're building and our different queer Black perspectives and the voices that we're bringing to the table.
I love that. And I think that my answer to that would be, I'm really, really grateful for the conversations I get to have and be a part of and start. Between like being able to do things on this show, being able to do things on other platforms, I'm a person who's really curious and really enjoys conversation and questioning people and being able to have a bit of thought leadership. And so that is probably what I enjoy the most, because we get countless emails from people or comments from folks that say like, oh, you've really opened up the way that I think about X, or you've really changed the way that, you know, I engage this thing, or, you know, I felt seen when you did this thing, or when you said, you know, whatever. And so those are the things that I think make it the most rewarding and the most valuable for me, because I feel like, even though, you know, there are all of these other things that are not so great about it, like there's something good that's coming out of it. Yeah. What about you?
So much about what both of you have said is about, it's about our connections to like what other people, it's not just about us, right? It's about what other people could potentially, you know, get from our visibility. And it's the same for me. You know, I love that I am a daily living manifestation of my wildest dreams, and that my visibility shows other people that they can also do whatever the hell else they want and make themselves into whatever they want to be. And that is, despite all of the bullshit that we deal with, I think those are the things that we hold on to that keep us going. So thank you, Ryan, so much for joining us. Tell the people where they can find you and follow your work.
Oh my God, please follow me everywhere at The Slay God. That is GAWDTHESLAYGAWD. And of course, you can listen to my radio show, Let's Go There with Sheer and Ryan, on Audacy, AUDACY app, or wherever you are in your radio dials. Check it out on the internet. Just Google it. It's cute. And then I'm also doing MTV every week on Snapchat, the Bop Quiz. Check me out over there, making you laugh and answering some funny trivia questions. But thank you so much to you both for having me on. Seriously. Aha! I slayed this episode.
That you did. Coming up, we're going to get into our dishonorable mentions and a little bit of listener feedback. We want to hear from you. Hit the hashtag FantiFam, at FantiPodcast. Y'all know the thing, okay? Y'all, we be back.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them.
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play.
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies.
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases,
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work,
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
Hey folks, it's me, James Arthur M., host of Minority Corner, your home through these wild times for weekly doses of pop culture, history, news, nerdy stuff, and more through a BIPOC queer and allied lens.
Sexy ass from Moonlight, who's in the third act of Moonlight, Trevante Rhodes, who was like,
oh, I've all grown up and I work out. Yeah, I do.
Let me have a case.
This is just, you know what? It's been a long pandemic, girl. What are you doing now to deconstruct this system?
He basically did a covert genocide of Black people.
So join me and some of your new BFFs every Friday here on Maximum Fun to stay informed, empowered, and have some fun. Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority.
Welcome back to Fanti. Loved that conversation with Ryan. I'm really, really excited that we got to do that. I feel like we probably could have gone on for another couple of hours because we certainly did at drinks the other night. But really grateful.
Yeah, and you came 3 hours late.
Okay, I was doing something and I didn't have to come in the first place. We're going to get to your listener.
You don't like to spend time with your other Black queer siblings. It's all right. We understand. Okay, wow. We got an email.
Wow. The attacks.
We got an email We got an email and listener feedback this week from Benny. This is regarding the No Sissies Allowed episode, which we just spoke about a few moments ago. The Benny says, hello, Travell and Jared, but this ain't about him.
Wow.
This email is in response to the No Sissies Allowed episode you hosted with Deshaun Harrison, and in particular, the conversation you two had about how cis people manufactured a monopoly on transits. Oh, my God. We were just talking about this. I forgot I pulled this email. Deshaun put it perfectly when describing how many non-binary people, myself included, feel as if they, quote, aren't allowed to identify as trans because of the very specific set of qualifications cis people have set for what trans is and looks like and who gets the resources. I just want to say I appreciate the insight it gave me, as I often have felt like an imposter moving through Sam's trans spaces, despite being non-binary myself and having been moving through trans space for the better part of my life. This is especially true because although I use they, them pronouns, I still let people get away with, quote unquote, get away with using he, him pronouns with me. I realize it's a disservice to myself, but also that just because I'm still learning to stand up for myself and my genderlessness doesn't make me any less non-binary or trans. Thank you for that, Benny.
Let me answer this one. I would say...
Here you go.
I'm kidding.
Here you go. Y'all see, this is why I had to kick him away, you know, kick him out for a week, okay?
Wow.
Because
is that the narrative?
His cis privilege, okay?
Wow. My cis light skin, older, black, freckled. Jeez Louise, all the privilege.
Anyway, Benny, I just wanted to affirm you in your entire journey, where it is now and where it will go. I similarly am, you know, still working through, you know, allowing people to like misgendering myself. I just wrote a piece over at Extra Magazine about, you know, a reflection that I had after that episode. So feel free to check it out. It's on my Twitter and all that other stuff. But yeah, it is a disservice to us. And when we get to a place when we can begin advocating for ourselves and claiming and taking up the space that we need to, using the language that is necessary, I think we'll all be the better for it. So thank you, Benny, so much for your email.
Now it's time for us to get into our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories of people that caught our attention, either for their good or for their stupid. I don't really have a whole lot to say this week. Do you have something?
I have just one thing, which will also double as our Black History moment. So if you have something, go first.
I just want to do a mention here to remind folks that are here in California that we have a really important election coming up at the top of next month. Gavin Newsom is being recalled. This is the second time in my lifetime where a Democratic governor has been up for recall, the first time with Gray Davis. It was stupid then and it's stupid now. So I just want to remind people that at the top of September or in September, we have an election coming up. And it's incredibly important that we get out and vote, because the way that a recall election works is different than a general election. And we have to make sure that we all get out and be involved in this process, because it's really, really important.
Yes. Amen. Hashtag get out the vote. Hashtag rock the vote. Hashtag throwback Thursday.
Hashtag what are you talking about, girl?
You don't remember Rock the Vote back in the day?
No, I did that one. Just the Throwback Thursday was really random, but it makes sense.
Well, because the episode comes out on Thursday. Rock the Vote is old. Okay, great. So, all right, it's time for...
Black History is happening every day.
No, now if you're going to do it, you got to do it. You got to bring the energy. You got to bring I can't. Anyway, this week's Black History is Happening Every Day moment, I want to put you all on to an individual by the name of Pauli Murray, P-A-U-L-I, Pauli Murray. If you're not familiar with Pauli Murray, the reason why I'm here in Martha's Vineyard at the African American Film Festival here is to, I'm doing a post-screening Q&A for a documentary coming out on Amazon in a few weeks called My Name is Pauli Murray. And this is a really great piece of Black history, queer history, and hell, some would say even non-binary history. Pauli Murray was a civil rights activist, a lawyer, women's rights activist, a priest, an author, a poet, all of the many, many things. I'm going to leave it there because I want you to do your own research and look up this wonderful, amazing individual and check out the doc when it comes out on Amazon in a few weeks. But that's where I wanted to, you know, I want to put some focus, honey, on the one and only Pauli Murray.
What was that impression? I want to pull, y'all didn't see the shoulders that went along with I want to pull some focus, What was that?
It don't matter. It don't matter.
If nothing else, make sure to go check out that. I also should mention that the Respect is coming out this week.
So you're just going to go backwards.
No, because I'm making it work. See, I'm a professional and I know what I'm doing. I want to give an honorable mention to Jennifer Hudson, Tytus Burgess, and Marlon Wayans. Really great performances. And the new film, Respect, the biopic of Aretha Franklin. We actually have a full conversation about our thoughts, our feels, our loves, our concerns with the new film, Respect, on Pop Culture Happy Hour. Travell and I are both featured guests this week on the show and had a really great time getting to really unpack it. So make sure to check out this week's episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. And we had a really great time with Linda and Steven. Yes. And really, really grateful to be on the show.
It comes out tomorrow on Friday. You're listening to this on Thursday, theoretically. It comes out on Friday, both the movie and the episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. So, you know, check us out. Okay, how you doing?
Right. Go see the movie because it's in theaters. And then you can listen to that episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour in the car or on the train or as you walk home or whatever it is that you do to get back home. And then it'll be a great thing to follow up with. If this conversation piqued your interest and you want more of this,
good.
Check out other episodes of the show that have related conversations. I think The Newsroom Where It Happens is probably an interesting one. Maybe freelancing and Beyonce's gig economy might be an interesting one for you. Check out those episodes because they are available in your feeds wherever you get your podcasts.
I am also blowing up the order of things to also recognize and bow down to our king and queen all in one who is gracing the cover of Harper's Bazaar.
Amen.
The September issue, Beyonce. Holly. There's a new Ivy Park drip drop coming, baby. And I will be getting me some pink camo, like cowhide, whatever that I can get, honey. It's going to be everything. So I just wanted to, you know, I couldn't let the episode end.
I want these navy blue chaps. Like, I don't know why, but I want them.
I don't know why either. Don't do that. Don't do that to us, please.
Thank
you.
If you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, we ask that you leave us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Let us know what you think about the show. It really, really is helpful for us for people finding the show. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet at us using @FanTyPodcast or on Instagram. It's the same @FanTyPodcast. Make sure to use the hashtag FanTyFam. Or you can send us an email with your feedback or asking for advice, putting advice in the subject line. Our email address is fanti@maximumfun.org.
And if you like the amazingness that we provide you every single week, you can help contribute some coins, okay, to the Fanti, to the Fanti brilliance, okay? Oh. You can do that by becoming a member at maximumfun.org/join. Our music is brought to you, as always, by the one and only Corrice, that's Core.ece, who is on his way back from Croatia.
There you go.
Performing
I was
in Croatia. So shout out to him. And our graphics, as always, done by the folks over at Moonhouse Creative, led by the one and only Ashley Wen.
Our producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Thank you. I love y'all so much. Can you do it for me? Can you say it?
Laura Swisher!
Yes, that's how you close some shit out. I slayed this episode.